Welcome to an inspirational Sunday message from Found Church. We hope you will be challenged and encouraged while listening to this message. For more information, or if you'd like to contact us, please visit our church website, foundchurch.co.uk, or you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
The book of Daniel. And our series in the book of Daniel is called Daniel, How to Live for God in Challenging Times. And the last time I spoke on the opening verses of chapter 1, and the title of my message a few weeks back was How the World Tries to Seduce the Church. But this time I want to look at the second half of chapter 1, and I want to pose the challenge to all of us today. Will you dare to be a Daniel today? Will you dare be a Daniel today? So if you have a Bible handy, I want you to turn with me to Daniel chapter 1, and we're going to read through from verse 8 through to verse 21, and it will be up on the screens also. So Daniel chapter 1, starting at verse 8. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favour and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Daniel said to the guard whom the chief official had pointed over, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of a time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, or Azariah. So they entered the king's service. And every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Amen. And I think when I read through these verses, the key to this entire passage is found in the very first verse that I read, in verse 8, where it says, But Daniel resolved. But Daniel resolved. The King James version of that verse says, But Daniel purposed in his heart. And another translation says, He made up his mind. He made up his mind. Everything else that happens flows from this point. Life that we live is a series of choices. We make decisions, and our decisions turn around and make us. You are who you are today because of the decisions and choices that you made years ago. Most of the time, we don't even realise how important those small choices that we make can be in the future in our lives. In fact, some sources, when I was researching that, suggest that the average person makes an eye-popping 35,000 choices per day. So let's just assume that the average person sleeps around 7 hours every night, and therefore you've got that 7 hours blissfully choice-free. That makes roughly 2,000 decisions per hour, or one decision every 2 seconds. Sooner or later, though, we'll have to all make a decision. And I think it's the most important decision that we can ever make in our life. And that decision is, will I decide to follow Jesus? Will I decide? That's the most important decision we can ever make in our life. Choices, decisions, which way to go? To follow Jesus, to not follow Jesus? Which one will we follow? We cannot choose both. Let me tell you, to not decide and put it off is actually to decide. And as we come to our text today, we find Daniel, the teenager, facing a crisis in Babylon. The decision that he is about to make will radically change his whole life in the future. And when we read about it, it doesn't seem like such a big deal, but it turns out to be a very big deal in Daniel's life. Daniel and his three friends, let me remind you, are in Babylon, having been torn away from their families in Jerusalem by King Nebuchadnezzar and the mighty Babylonian army. Because these young men had come from noble backgrounds, the king orders them to be trained to enter into his service. And these are God-fearing Jewish teenagers, ripped out of everything they have known, and now they're being trained to work for a pagan king. And this begins what I called in my last message when we looked at the first part of this chapter 1, Operation Assimilation. The king makes sure that they get the best education that Babylon can offer. And for 3 years they'll be totally immersed in Babylonian knowledge, in their culture, in their history, in their language, and even in their religion. And their Jewish names are changed in favour of new Babylonian names. And at the end of their time and in their training, they'll enter into the king's service and they'll be assured of high-level government positions. And let me tell you, that was a sophisticated form of brainwashing aimed at making them forget all about their past and form a new allegiance to the king and his pagan way of life. And I think there's two really important points that we can see in this passage that is relevant for us today. And the first thing I see there is that Daniel was tested. Let me tell you, we'll be tested too. Daniel was tested and we will be tested also. Everything appears to be going smoothly until one teenager decides that he's not going to go along with the program. The first part of verse 8 tells us what we need to know. It says there, but Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And this is a crucial event in Daniel's life. It might not have appeared like that at the time, but what Daniel did in that moment, it shaped the next 60 years of his life. And I think it's safe to say that looking back from our perspective, Daniel's decision appears a little bit odd to us. Why? Because we're not Jews living in captivity in Babylon. So it's hard for us to understand what the big fuss about eating the king's food at the king's table is actually all about. After all, when we look at the story, as far as we can tell, Daniel accepted the bondage, he accepted the pagan education, and he evidently even accepted the new pagan name. And if you're going to go along with all of that, why worry about the food that you're eating? What's the big deal about the food? And someone has pointed out before that Daniel had to make three important decisions each and every single day. Firstly, he had to take part in that pagan education. But he could disregard the things that he knew in that education that were wrong or the things that he knew was untrue. Secondly, he had to put up with being called that pagan name. But he knew that a name alone couldn't define who he really was. Only God could do that. But then, thirdly, he had to eat the pagan food. And at that point, he couldn't escape what that actually represented. And I find it really fascinating that what appears to be, to me at least, or to us, the least important issue was the most important issue to Daniel. But Daniel had a proper sense of priorities. He knew that eventually, you've got to draw a line in the sand, no further will I go. That is a step too far. But the question is, why would Daniel refuse at the food? Let me tell you, there were at least three problems with the food that was being offered at the king's table. Firstly, it certainly would not have been prepared according to the kosher laws of the Old Testament. Much of the food would be ritually unclean. Secondly, all the wine and the most of the meat would have been previously offered to pagan gods. And to eat that food in that situation, well, that would be to give endorsement straight to paganism in that moment. And thirdly, Daniel knew that sharing a meal at the king's table represented sharing the king's values. Even today, sharing a meal with someone has a huge symbolic meaning. To eat together implies a friendship, it implies support, it implies endorsement, and it implies shared values. In the end, Daniel could obey the king and even serve in his government, but he could never ever pretend to be his friend. To eat that food in that situation represented a moral compromise of everything that Daniel believed in. And therefore, what did he do? He made up his mind that he would not do it. And this is hugely important. Why? Because it teaches us that you can't corrupt a man from the outside. You can change a culture around us, but you can't, not a character. You can change his name, but you can't change his nature. And Daniel may have looked like a pagan, but on the inside, he was a servant of the living God. Even the mighty Nebuchadnezzar could not do a thing about that. And I think it's important that we just pause for a second and realise what Daniel was risking by taking this stand. See, he risked anger on the king, who definitely would not appreciate hearing that some teenage kid from Israel didn't want to eat at his table. No way could that be made to sound good to the king. In fact, it would probably sound really rebellious, and we know how ancient kings often dealt with rebellion. That's how they dealt with it. So Daniel was putting his life on the line by taking a stand. And he was also, secondly, spoiling his own chances for advancement. We all know the saying that about going along to get along, or you can't climb the ladder while you're rocking the boat. Look what happens to whistleblowers in any big company. Even when they're right, they still end up in big trouble later. And if this blows up in Daniel's face, well, he can certainly kiss his future goodbye. And it's also, on the flip side, important to notice that there were excuses that Daniel could have used, but didn't use. We could ask why he might have eaten the king's food, even though he didn't like it. After all, he was far from home. No one from Jerusalem was there. No one back in Jerusalem would ever hear about it. Almost everybody else was eating the food with no complaints. Have you ever used any of those excuses? Far away from home, nobody will know. Everybody else is doing it. They're not complaining. I could do it too. Only one person in the first service was brave enough to say, "Oh, yes, I've done that." I was the second. All of us use these excuses at one point or another. Or they might think, "I'm already in captivity," so you could say, "Well, what difference does it make? God understands it's only food. We could eat it with our fingers crossed. I need to do this to get ahead." Or maybe people will think I'm a narrow-minded legalist if I make a fuss about the food. Let me tell you, you can always find an excuse when you don't want to do the right thing. But Daniel didn't need an excuse. Why? Because he had already decided to do the right thing no matter what happened to him. Verse 8 says that he purposed in his heart, in the King James translation. He had made up his own mind. He couldn't decide for anybody else, but he decided for himself what he would do and what he would not do. This changed everything. And I don't know if he tried to convince anyone else or not, but it does not matter. Daniel made up his mind, and his three closest friends decided to join him. See, the Babylonians could change everything. Could change his diet, could change his location, his education, his language, even change his name. But they couldn't ever change his heart. Why? Because his heart belonged to God. See, when your heart truly belongs to God, you can go anywhere and face any situation. Let me tell you, you'll be okay. You can even live in Babylon and do just fine. Because your body might be in Babylon, but your heart will be in heaven. So the question for all of us today is, where's your heart? Does it truly belong to God? Or is your heart fixed on the things of this earth? Verse 9, I think, adds a crucial fact when it says, "Now God." Now God. Suddenly, God is entering into the picture here. He caused Aspenaz to look with favour upon Daniel and his three friends. And it's important to note that this happened after Daniel's decision, not before. Daniel decided, and then God intervened. That's important. That's important. Does God bless those who honour him? Of course, yes, he does. But you generally don't experience that blessing until you actually stand up for what you believe. I think there's a blessing that's reserved for the bold that the timid will never ever experience. You'll never experience it if you just go with the flow and just go along with what everybody else is doing, everybody else is saying. Daniel's proposal was really simple. He asked that he and his three friends be taken off that rich diet and be served only vegetables and water for 10 days. And at the end of the time, the guard could then make his own comparison and draw his own conclusions. And I think there are several attractive ways in the way that Daniel actually made his proposal. Things that we could learn for today, that firstly, he was very tactful in the way he spoke. He never demanded anything, he just simply made a request. He was obedient and following the chain of command. And his request was reasonable. The test would be over in 10 days and didn't require the preparation of any unusual food to make it happen. And at the end, it was easy to evaluate. The guard simply had to eyeball and look at the four versus the others and then draw his own conclusions. And in verses 15 and 16, tells us that at the end of the 10 days, the four teenagers looked better on their vegetable and water diet than the others who had been eating T-bone steaks at the king's table. I think I'd be tempted by the T-bone steaks at the king's table. Like, just being honest. But they looked so good that the guard let them continue with their strange diet indefinitely. So the first thing that happens is Daniel is tested, and we'll be tested also. Then the second thing that happens in the story with Daniel, what happens to us, is that Daniel was rewarded. The story comes to an end on a really positive note. In verse 17 it says, these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. And then in verse 20 it says, in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. See, we discover in these verses that God always honours those who honour him. In this case, in this story, the reward came really quickly, but often it takes much longer than that. Sometimes when we are faithful, our reward doesn't come until we get to heaven, and then we'll get our reward. And I mention the timing because it's possible for some of us to read this story and then get the idea that every single time we stand up for our convictions, that then we'll be immediately rewarded. But that isn't always the case. So therefore, I think it's really appropriate that we marvel at Daniel's reward, but also remember that God deals with us as individuals differently each and every single time. But our call is to simply be faithful, knowing that in the end, whether on earth or in heaven, no one will ever regret standing up for Jesus. No one will ever regret it. Verse 17 says that God gave these four young men wisdom and understanding that guaranteed they would stand out above their Jewish contemporaries and far above the Babylonians. That was the reward. Cream rises to the top, and these four men soon find themselves in positions of enormous influence in a pagan government because they stood up for what they believed. By the way, and I think it's important that we notice the order that things happened in. Firstly, the decision is made to stand up for what they believed. Secondly, God then honoured that decision. And then thirdly, God gave them the wisdom and understanding. So they made the choice. This far and no further. God honoured that decision, and then God gave them the reward, the wisdom and understanding. It's important to note the order because let me tell you, you can hardly ask God for wisdom while you're living in a state of spiritual compromise. As hard as that might sound, you cannot ask God for wisdom when you're living in a state of spiritual compromise. See, again, God honours those who honour him. And the last part of verse 17 tells us that God gave Daniel the unique ability to interpret dreams. And when we come on to chapter 2, we'll see how that actually saved his life. In verse 18, it skips to the end of the 3 years of education. And now King Nebuchadnezzar, well, he'll examine all the young men himself. This is the ultimate exam. And they would be questioned on things like history, science, economics, the Babylonian language, and presumably on things like Babylonian religion, which probably included things like astrology and witchcraft. And these young men had to know everything that the other young leaders had to know. And the result at the end is absolutely astounding. The king found them 10 times smarter than the magicians and enchanters in his kingdom. Talk about going right to the top of the class. And then they immediately entered the king's service. And verse 21 adds that Daniel remained in the court of Babylon until the first year of Cyrus in 539 BC. That means that he served as an advisor to a whole series of Babylonian kings for at least 60 more years. All this because Daniel said no and refused to cross the line. And before we leave this amazing first chapter of Daniel, let's stop to draw some of the more important lessons for us today. Firstly, the world will continually try to reprogram us into a different way of thinking. Let me tell you, it happened to Daniel and his three friends through a course of systematic brainwashing aimed at separating these young men from their past. It involved a new location, a new education, a new diet, a new culture, a new language, and ultimately new names. Let me tell you, 25 centuries have come and gone, and nothing has changed in the slightest. The world still attempts to separate us from our spiritual heritage. And obviously, our young people are most at risk today. But the attack comes to all of us in subtle ways each and every single day. We are promised promotions that will take away from our families and from our church service. We are offered educational opportunities that will fill our minds with godless falsehoods. We are told to keep quiet about our faith until we get to the top, and then we can maybe speak out. And all of us are bombarded each and every single day with anti-God input from the media constantly, every day. Make no mistake, there is a battle for your mind, a battle for my mind. A battle has been fought each and every single day. Some of us are losing that battle. Why? Because we don't even know there's a battle going on. We just go with the flow. And we wonder why we end up looking and sounding just like the Babylonians rather than Jesus' followers. We just blend in to the culture around about us and say the same things and do the same things as everybody else. And we wonder how we got there. There's a battle happening for your mind. Secondly, I think we need to make up our minds in advance that we will be loyal to God. And the key phrase here is in advance. See, some decisions can't be made on the spur of the moment. You have to decide that you will not compromise on the things that matter. For Daniel, that meant not eating the food at the king's table. And it doesn't matter that we today might not fully understand his decision, but what is important is that Daniel drew that line. Daniel drew the line and he said, this far and no further. This far and no further. Let me tell you, your line might be different from mine and my line different from yours, and that is fine. But if you don't draw a line somewhere, sometime, you end up just being like the Babylonians all around you. And then I just came to my mind a really famous song, and the line in that song says, I stood for nothing and I fell for everything. I can't believe Katy Perry lyric just came to my mind as I was speaking this. I never thought I'd see the day where I mentioned Katy Perry, but that line, it says, I stood for nothing and I fell for everything. That's what happens in our lives. We stand for nothing and we just fall for every single thing. And when that happens, when we end up just being like the Babylonians all around us, let me tell you, at that point, your testimony is useless. Your testimony is useless. What difference has Jesus made in your life when you're just the same as every single other person around about you? And it's hard stuff, but it's true. Like I was saying to somebody, I wish I could be coming every Sunday, be like, oh, Jesus loves you, let's go stuff. But this is true stuff, straight from Scripture. See, we need to be smart. We need to think ahead. We need to decide what we won't do, and then we need to make sure we don't do it. And I'm not talking about brain surgery here. I'm talking about common sense thinking about your Christian values. And let me remind you that not every hill is worth dying on. Some are, but let me tell you, it's better to die on those hills than to slink off in shameful compromise because you didn't have any courage. Let me tell you, church, please choose your battles carefully. Like I mentioned in the first service, I've seen that there's been an uproar on social media this week because I think it's Iceland decided to change their design of hot cross buns and it doesn't look across anymore. And these Christians are up and, oh man, they're spouting forth all over Facebook and social media. And I'm thinking, just go and tell people about Jesus. Like, put that energy into telling people about Jesus. Pick your battles. Like, Iceland's not really going to care. Like, pick your battles. I've never met anybody, maybe there's somebody in this room who'll tell me they did, but I've never met anybody who got saved because there was a cross on top of their hot cross bun. Like, most people put them in a toaster and butter them and eat them. Like, let's be real here. Like, let's just get our priorities right. And you might shoot me when I go out the door for saying things like that, but it's true. Like, it's true. That's what I was like. That's not a hill worth dying on. Like, not in the slightest. So pick your battles. Pick your battles and make sure it's the right battles or you're going to draw the line and say, this far and no further. This far and no further. And then thirdly, it's important that we know our own limits. And we must know what to do when something is happening that we know is wrong. And this follows just logically from what I've just said. See, Daniel knew his limits. When they enrolled him into the Babylonian State University, he never objected. When they taught him the Babylonian language, he learned it just like everybody else. When they taught him a new culture, he did not rebel. Even when they changed his name, he apparently did not speak out. But when they said, "You have to eat the king's food at the king's table," he said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I can't do that." And he didn't. He was courteous in the way that he said it, and he was creative in the solution that he proposed. But make no mistake, by standing his ground, he was risking everything over an issue that made no sense to anybody but him and his three friends. To the Babylonians, that would have just been crazy. Why would you give up this choice food? But Daniel saw through the food to the bigger issues that lay underneath. He knew that for him to eat that food at that table would be an act of disloyalty to God. And that was a line that he was not willing to cross. And you might be thinking, but it's such a small thing, why worry? I would say that's true, and it's also not true. Yes, it seemed small, but as we've seen, the outcome of Daniel's act of courage ended up being huge. It changed his whole life. In the end, it wasn't small after all. And let me tell you, for us today, even the smallest, most insignificant decisions or choice that we make can have massive, huge implications on our life. And one of my favourite authors and speakers is Craig Groeschel, and he's written a great book called Divine Direction, 7 Decisions That Will Change Your Life. And let me just quote from his book. He says, "There are certain good habits create other good habits. And the opposite is also true. The absence of strategic habits generate bad habits. An undisciplined life never leads to productivity or progress. And if you don't put the right disciplines in place, one day you're going to find yourself telling a story you never wanted to tell. When I force myself to floss, even though I don't want to, I feel disciplined. Since I feel disciplined, I continue with my workout plan. I eat better, I sleep better too. Then I go to work in a good frame of mind and I'm more productive. People applaud my good work, so I come home in a good mood and kiss my wife. And that's why we have 6 kids together. On the other hand, when I don't floss, I don't feel disciplined. When I break the momentum of my discipline, I'm more tempted to drop other habits as well. Since I didn't floss, I'm more likely to skip a workout, which then helps me rationalise eating more junk food. Those lazy, sloppy habits then come back to haunt me when I don't sleep as well at night. I toss and turn and wake up tired, grumpy, and even more apathetic. Since I don't sleep well, I skip my Bible study, falling even deeper into the self-made pit. When I'm at work, I'm not in a good frame of mind, so I'm not as productive and I get easily distracted. Since I'm not as focused as usual, I have to work late to get everything done. Knowing that Amy won't be happy I'm late coming home, I speed down back roads, only to be pulled over by a police officer who's waiting patiently for a speeder like me. I don't want to get a speeding ticket, so I try to outrun him, only to be stopped just a block from my house by 4 other police officers who've set up a roadblock. Then my mugshot ends up on a 10 o'clock news and I spend the night in the jail, all because I didn't floss." Okay, so maybe I'm exaggerating a little, but you have to agree, certain disciplines lead to other positive actions. And the path to discipline always begins with your daily decisions. How many of us will find the courage to say no when we need to? Like Daniel, you'll find yourself from time to time in a moral crisis. How will you know it's a crisis? You'll know it when you get there, trust me. And often you won't even see it coming in advance. So make up your mind right now, church, that by God's grace, when those moments come, you will purpose in your heart not to defile yourselves. Make up your mind now. And years ago, I heard a little phrase that helped me more than once. See, when I first got saved, and I realised that the way I was living before, I couldn't keep living that way. I had to change the way I was living. God was challenging me that was not how I should be living. And especially at work, when I still worked in industry and people wanted me to be the same Stephen and do the same stuff I did before, and someone said these words to me, but it gave me this hard moral choice. They said, "Others may, I cannot." So I'm thinking, others might be able to do that, but I cannot do that. They said to me, "You don't have to decide for anybody else, but you do have to decide for yourself. You have to make the decision for yourself." This week I read about a 400-year redwood tree that suddenly fell over without anyone. And what caused the death of such this big, magnificent giant of a tree? Was it fire? Was it lightning? Was it a strong wind? It was none of these. And when they examined the tree after it had fallen, they realized that tiny beetles had crawled under the bark and had literally eaten the fibers away from inside the tree. And even though it looked healthy on the outside, on the inside it was virtually hollow, and one day it just finally collapsed. Let me tell you, the same thing happens to us when we refuse to stand our ground for Jesus. When we compromise, one compromise after another, the same thing happens to us. Every time we compromise, something bad happens in our soul. Even the little decisions add up. Sorry, eventually the little decisions will add up and we become hollow on the inside, even though we might look great on the outside. Can I encourage the church? Don't let that happen to you. And number four, and as the band comes, godly convictions always yield God-given rewards. What starts with Daniel ends with God. What starts with courage ends up with a lifetime of blessing for Daniel. Look what God did for this courageous teenager. God protected Daniel when he proposed the test. God prospered Daniel during the test and afterwards. God promoted Daniel in the eyes of the king. And I can't read this story without thinking of the words of God to Eli in 1 Samuel chapter 3 verse 20. And it says, God says this, those who honour me, I will honour. Those who honour me, I will honour. I told you right at the start, this was a crucial thing, a crucial event in Daniel's life. And it might not have seemed important at the time, but his decision not to eat the king's food shaped the next 60 years of his life. And we talk about Daniel some 2,500 years later precisely because of his decision that day. If he doesn't make the right choice, let me tell you, the rest of the book never gets written. And he becomes a forgotten Jew in Babylon who looked and acted just like everybody else. I don't know about you, but I don't want to just become another human being that looks and acts like everybody else. That's not my plan for my life. And I know that in terms of scientific progress, the world has changed since Daniel's day, but let me tell you, God has not changed. God's word has not changed. And the world still tries to seduce us today, the same as it did for Daniel. But the good news from Daniel chapter 1 is that it's possible to live for God wherever we are, whether we're in high schools, in university, at our work, in the coffee shop, wherever we go, the supermarket, we can live for God wherever we go. Daniel has shown us the way. Daniel has shown us the way. And let me tell you, the application for my message today is so simple. I want to just dare everybody here, including me, especially me. Will I be a Daniel this week? Will I be a Daniel this week? Will you be a Daniel this week? Decide in advance. The line's here and I'm not prepared to cross over. I don't want to become the same as everybody else. I want to stand out for Jesus. I want to be the person Jesus created me to be. It might look tempting, look flash. You stand for nothing, you fall for everything. It takes you to all sorts of bad places. And Elizabeth's smiling because I've quoted Katy Perry twice in one message. So random, there we go. But I'm telling you, honestly, that's what happened. I can see it. I can see the moments in my life where I've crossed the line and what happened, the downfall, regretting the bad choices. But when I draw that line and say this far and no further, and I stick by that, God always, always, always protects me, helps me, and honours me. And He will do the same for you. Let's pray.
Thank you for listening. We hope you've been challenged and inspired. Please feel free to contact us through our website, foundchurch.co.uk, or you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.